It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Hello. Happy Friday to you. The vibes are so high right now. Hey, you know how yesterday I was whining about the fact that Starbucks already had their fall line out?
Yep.
I got a fall drink when I stopped them. No, they have it's the apple crisp oat milk shaken espresso.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
I will partake in that a couple of times during the holidays.
Yeah.
Although,
yeah.
You know, they killed the Starbucks by the arena. So, like, we can't get Starbucks.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They killed the Starbucks right there on the corner.
Yeah.
What is it? David J. Stern Walk and mm-hmm. 7th? Yeah. It 7th? Is no more. Yeah, 7th and, yeah, that's 7th for sure.
I think there's more than one Starbucks nearby, though.
You got to walk a little ways.
That's okay. We got a drive. There's one like right here that you can stop on your way out.
No, that's true.
That's the move. I think that one that we used to go to all the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think we could just stop at that one, and then you can just hit 80 from Douglas.
That's true. There's also the like drive through ones, you know? Like
no, it's true. If you're a drive-thru guy.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Very good. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We have a ton to get to today. ESPN has more NBA predictions out. I'm a little confused about their latest ones, but we'll talk about it. The 49ers and Raiders wrap up their preseasons tonight against one another. But the bigger deal this morning, James, is that you no longer have to drive people to school ever again.
Yeah, so, you know, I think it's one thing, you know, when you're a parent, you get so tied up in... And like, what's next, right? So when you have an infant, you're always, you can't wait until they say their first word. You can't wait until they crawl, until they smile, they right. laugh the first time. You can't wait till they walk. Then you can't wait until they talk. Then you can't wait till they can play T-ball and until they go to school. And then you get to school and you realize that one of the worst things in the world is dropping your kids and picking your kids up at school. And
what? Why?
Because it's chaos. And it's chaos with like varying degrees of intelligence and of, you know, people who some care about the people, they're conscientious about the people around them, some aren't. Mm. So it's everyone's got to go through line. Everyone's stressed because they're already late and their kids have driven them crazy and you're not sure if they have their lunch pail and you're not sure if they had some permission slip that they needed to sign, then
of course
you're in one line and everyone has to go through the same exact loop. And then some lady gets out of her car and kisses all three of her kids and takes 3 minutes and everyone else is going to be late because of it. It becomes like this stressful thing. And then when you have a second kid, it gets worse because now you have multiple pickup times, you have multiple drop-off times. You got to do the same thing. Like,
twice.
There's sometimes you're at school 3, 4, 5 times a day, picking kids, dropping kids off.
Huh.
And so it becomes like this horrendous thing where you're always waiting in line. There are people who are rude. There are people who try to skip line. One time during a rainstorm, I had a lady try to skip line. They tell her, hey, no, you got to go get in line. She
yeah.
pulls out in front of me. We go, she's got to turn around and go back and get in line. Kyle, it gets worse. I'm at the stoplight. She cuts me off. I'm at the stop sign behind her. We pull out onto the main road because now she's got to go all the way down and turn around and come back and get in the line. Pouring down rain. Kyle, I'm driving on the road. I'm right behind her. She's been in front of me the whole time. She takes a right into where the soccer field is, hangs a U-turn, and takes out the entire back end of my car. Misses my my kindergartner by about that much. Literally wiped out the entire back end of the Corolla. $8,800 worth of damage. Crushed my whole back end. Like, I lost my mind. Like, so what I'm saying is, like, drop off and pick up is stressful. It's chaotic. It might be one of the worst things. If people out there don't know if they want to have kids or not, go tell your friends that, hey, I'll take your kids to school like 3 times. And by the end of it, they'll be like, okay, no, snip, snip, let's go. I'm done.
Yeah, this sounds awful.
Okay, so, but now just think, I've had two, and my boys are, they're 4 years apart, but my youngest is a late birthday, and we waited to put him in school until.
Sure.
So now he's one of the older kids, but he's still just growing, right? So he turned 17 in a couple of days.
Great.
And he's a junior, so he could be a senior, but he's a junior.
Right.
Right? So that means for the last 16 years, I've had drop-off and pick-up. So either me or my wife have had to drop kids off, pick them up every single day.
Oh, and, because by the time number two was born, number one was to go into school.
Yeah, and by the time number one graduated high school, number one was still in eighth grade, so they never even had to ride together. So I've never had the convenience of having both of them at the same school at the same time.
So one never dropped off two?
No, and they're all right. So the schools where we're at, there's like a K through fourth and then a fifth through eighth right up on the hill.
Right, an elementary and a middle.
Yeah, and then right down the street is a high school. It's all on one street. It's all, but that means every morning you, so even last year, like the start of our show last year, I complained about waking up my 16-year-old.
Right, yes, yes, yes.
Right, so I'd wake him up four times. I'd have to get in the shower. I got to get dressed. We got to do the show. But then, like every single day, it's like 8:22 and we're getting out the door. He's got to be to school by 8:30. Then I get him there on time, but he walks. He doesn't run. And then he's tardy like half the time. So then I got to call the school and make up some reason why he was 3 minutes late to work, 3 minutes late to school. But then I get to turn around and get stuck in the traffic from the pickup and the drop off. So it's over. It's over. It's done with.
Because two can drive himself to school now.
Yes. Braden now has his.
That's so big time.
He has his own driver's license. Not only that, but we went out on the Facebook Marketplace, which is a dark place, people. It's a dark place. Facebook Marketplace to buy a vehicle is horrible. But we were able to get him a 2012 Honda Pilot. Got a good deal. And so now, lo and behold, he now wakes up to his alarm that he never woke up to before.
Mm-hmm.
He's up before I am. He's out the door before I am. He gets to school early, hangs out, drives his own car. I don't even see him.
He's just fired up to drive?
He's just fired up. He's gone. He's out the door, and I don't have to worry about any of it. And that's where today.
Incredible.
I called him. It was like right before school starts, maybe like 8:25. I'm like, hey, have a good day at school. He's like, all right. He's already there. He's already probably in class waiting for
Incredible.
Things to happen. I'm like, have a good day. Don't forget to get your dance ticket. He's like, I got it yesterday. I'm like, all right, cool. Have a good day.
Just Captain Responsibility over
and now
here.
I'm like,
amazing. Well done.
Never again. Never again.
Don't have to live the nightmare anymore. That's incredible. Congrats, man. You've done it.
I've done it.
You did it.
Yes.
You basically, like, you're done. I mean, you're not done parenting, but like.
No.
You've done the hard stuff.
Well, this
is like you're coasting now.
This is like the biggest thing that's off your shoulders where you're like, oh man, it is so miserable. Like so miserable. And you know, good day, big shout out to our friends in the lake who, you know, because my job is weird. Like there are times where I've got practice and I'm not going to make it back at 3 o'clock or 2:30. And we've had friends pick up our boys for years. And so it's been like a real community thing, but that doesn't take away like in the mornings and afternoons.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
So there it is.
Well, congrats, man. That's big time. And you had time to stop and pick up donuts.
And I had time to stop.
Which is huge.
Yeah. I was a few minutes late, but yeah, I had to.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Dude, that's why I like Thursday so much.
Yep.
Because if you were a few minutes late on a Tuesday, like scramble drill.
Oh, yeah.
Like what? All right. Hang on. We got to lock in. Like no chit chat. We can't be out bopping around the office. We got to lock in. What are we doing today?
Yep.
Versus on a Friday, it's like, yeah. Pull up whenever. Like showtime's 10 o'clock.
That's right.
Get here by 9:55. We're good.
It's just
I have yesterday's rundown, by the way.
All right. Oh,
it's the wrong one.
Oh, this is
yeah.
So hey, it's just one of those things that people don't think about when they're thinking about having kids. It literally is the most miserable of miserable, you know, especially cold weather. You get out. You've got like 8 minutes to get to school, and your whole windshield's frosted, and you're like. What am I even doing here? What is happening?
Yeah. That's awful. The things I've realized People always say when you're growing up, you know, you don't understand really where your parents are coming from until you, and then as you start to get older, I've started experiencing this really in college, like my first year of college. When you're out on your own, I was like, oh wow, they were right about that. Or, oh, I get that now. The pickup and drop off stuff was something I had never even considered until today. Until right now. That set off the, my parents did that for me. Like that's my, I started, it's, I walked sometimes. Mm-hmm. I had a buddy who was a senior when I was a junior, or junior when I was a sophomore. Yeah, junior when I was a sophomore, who'd drive me to school sometimes. I had neighbors, same deal, community, really good community, who would take me to school sometimes. But it's like, man, my parents sat in so many drop off and pickup lines. Like, that's great. And never once do I remember them, like, saying anything about it.
No.
They just silently seethed, I guess.
Well, that is, they know that if you're a true pickup artist for school, you have to get there 15, maybe 20 minutes early and wait in line. So you got to have, you're sitting there scrolling on your phone or whatever, just waiting for them. And then there's always the concern that your kid's not going to come out. You're, like, waiting in line and you're, like, on the curb and you're one of the first cars.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone's got to get out and go around you because your kid's late.
Mm.
And so we had, our oldest is one of the ones that kind of lollygags out. One of the last ones out, you're like, get in the car, man. Everyone is waiting.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We did, we would go down around the corner. I'd walk down a few blocks around a corner to get away from the pickup madness in middle school.
Oh, yeah.
That's how that would go. But no, then like baseball tournaments. I played tournament ball from the time I was 12, like basically through high school.
Oh, yeah.
And so they just, going to go to Modesto for the weekend, sit there and watch a bunch of kids play baseball.
Soccer tournaments, like they don't know how much the Airbnbs cost.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Or like just family.
Not a care in the world.
The politics of sharing a house with families on one year and then the next year, there's one family that's not part of your group, but there's, you know, there's now a new family.
And then there's beef with these
and
families.
And the other family's upset. Yeah, and you're like, we're sorry, but you didn't want to go for 7 days and we're going to have to pay for the whole trip.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Oof. Yeah.
Shout out to parents and people raising kids. You guys are
chaos.
You guys are doing the Lord's work. Brandon Ayuk update for you. Still no update.
We said we weren't going to do this. Now we're just updating you that there's no update.
Mike Silver from the San Francisco Chronicle yesterday went on KNBR, and had the same update everybody else has had.
Yeah.
It's just kind of there at the same tipping point they've been at. But then he throws in at the end, I'd watch out for the Commanders, though.
Mm.
Like, wait, what? Where is this? Watch it. And I don't know if that comes from a place of, hey, Brandon, the Commanders are also a team that were involved in these trade talks, but apparently they're like no deal was ever consummated. They kind of backed out early.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mike Silver used to work for the Washington Commanders. He was their like team reporter.
Oh.
As far as I remember.
Okay.
But he worked for or was heavily involved with the Commanders. So when he floats this, my knee-jerk reaction is like, wow, that's ridiculous. Like he's just floating the other team just to say something different. But at the same time, like he used to work, so maybe he knows. And this has just not been reported. And all of a sudden the Commanders are a real, I have no idea, but that's the new wrinkle. But ultimately, still nothing. And there's never, it was a, hey, don't forget about the Commanders kind of thing. It wasn't like, oh, they're in talks with the Commanders.
Yeah, just like throw it on out there. Just like.
Just going to throw this at the wall.
Yeah, see if it sticks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird. So that's where that's at. Speaking of football, Fantasy Friday, first one of the year today. Fantasy Friday, Faraz Siddiqui going to join us at 10:30 from Upper Hand Fantasy. That is an Odyssey podcast. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts. We know that you got fantasy football drafts coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk to Faraz about what he's looking at for this upcoming season, rookies he likes, sleeper options, things like that. You can send your questions to the Chatty House at youtube.com/ESPN1320. I'm going to try opening up the phone lines. And we can have people chat with Faraz on the phone.
Uh-oh.
If you want, do you want to try that? Well, I'm asking you this on air.
We can try.
This is an off-air conversation.
No, I think it's fine if we try it. Okay, as long as people are respectful, they get in, they get out, they ask their question, and they understand we're like going to try to rapid-fire.
Yeah, we're moving. We're moving for sure. Okay, well, phone lines are open. 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320. Faraz Siddiqui at 10:30. He's going to join us. And if you're not a fantasy person... we do talk a little bit of betting with Faraz. If you're not a betting or fantasy person, he's just fun to talk football with. It's just a genuinely really good football conversation. I don't think I ever asked about any of my teams last year, and I was still just locked in, just dialed. Really enjoyed the conversation, yeah. So I think you will too. That's coming up at 10:30. All right, ESPN predictions, NBA predictions. Their week-long set of predictions that have been coming out. The Western Conference, will remind you, was yesterday. And ESPN predicted that the Kings would finish sixth in the Western Conference. It was Oklahoma City 1. It was the Timberwolves 2. It was Mavericks 3, Nuggets 4, Suns 5, Kings 6.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Los Angeles Lakers, for example, were out of the play-in in ESPN's predictions. And again, this is like a panel of people that they do a little straw poll.
Mm-hmm.
Pause. And... they come up with these predictions and they publish them.
I've told you I've been in this panel before.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So their prediction of the conference finals is out.
Hmm.
Eastern Conference Finals. Who will win the Eastern Conference Finals is the question. Here are the five teams who received votes in order. Boston Celtics. Philadelphia 76ers. New York Knicks, Milwaukee Bucks, Cleveland Cavaliers. Those are the top five teams.
Okay.
I think if you told me a team from the East is going to win the finals, I think those are probably the five teams I'd be comfortable betting on.
I would have the same...
I think in that order. I might put the Knicks ahead of the Sixers.
I'd have the first four, and I would put the Knicks ahead of the Sixers.
Okay.
And I might even... like, it's a coin toss between the Bucks and the Sixers. Just because, like, the Sixers have a lot of newness, sir.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And the Bucks still have Giannis and Dame. If they're both healthy in a playoff series, that might just be enough.
Especially if they could ever get Chris Middleton healthy again.
Oh man, yeah,
yeah.
There's a path to the Bucks being really good. The interesting thing was no Magic. The Cavaliers there, but not Orlando, which I thought was kind of interesting.
And no Indiana, who made it to the Eastern Conference Finals last year.
No Indiana. So, interesting there. The West, though, and you guys know me. You guys know that I understand where the national media is and what they're doing and what, like, the goal is of things like this. I also reject the idea that people hate Sacramento. I don't think anyone hates Sacramento. I think people just don't pay attention, mm-hmm. which is a whole other problem. Again, want to remind you, the top six teams in the West, per these same predictions, were the Thunder, the Timberwolves, the Mavericks, the Nuggets, the Suns, and the Kings.
Yep.
So who will win the Western Conference?
Oh.
They have six teams. Number one, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Number two, the Minnesota Timberwolves. Number three, the Dallas Mavericks. Again, this is to win the Western Conference and go to the NBA Finals.
This is identical to their list before, but
identical.
Ahead. Yeah,
and
identical.
It's going to stay identical with the Nuggets at number four. Number five, the Phoenix Suns.
Identical. Same list.
So number six... would obviously be the Sacramento Kings, right?
Of course it would be.
Wrong! Number six! Is it one of the play-in teams? Is it Memphis?
Is it New Orleans?
Is it New Orleans? Is it the Golden State Warriors?
Is it the Houston Rockets that they had tied with everyone else?
With Memphis, yup.
Yeah.
Is it one of those play-in teams? No! At number six, ESPN, which predicted... the Los Angeles Lakers to finish 11th.
Erroneous.
In the West.
Erroneous.
Has them as the number six team in their predictions to win the Western Conference. Congratulations.
Well.
They've done it. Hang the banner for the Lakers.
You know, they do have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And any team that has those two could win this whole thing.
Get out of town. What? That's crazy.
Oh, that's hilarious, man.
Jeez, dude. I don't... Look, I get, I want to actually talk about this list, and we will. And I'm sure whatever happens here, however the voting goes, it just, somebody, the person who picked the Lakers is to win, or the people who picked the Lakers to win the Western Conference also probably voted for them higher than 11th. That's probably just how this happens. That's how this all works out. But on the other hand, when you're publishing this, wouldn't you want to just chop off that sixth team?
Yeah, can't you just like
have a little continuity?
Well, not only that, but it's funny you bring that up, Kyle.
Please.
It's funny you bring up that you can't just chop off that last team, because when you did the Eastern Conference, you only gave us your top five.
Uh-huh.
So why did you need to give us your top six in the West?
Is it? It must be because they assign point totals based on votes.
But they got 2 points.
And the Cavaliers got 2 points at number five.
Okay.
So maybe only five teams in the East got votes, and these six teams in the West got votes.
That's wild.
I would like to know. I would love to sit down again, and I want to talk about the rest of this list, because I just, and you know, we can talk about ESPN's voting process or whatever. It ultimately doesn't matter. These aren't deciding anything. It's just stuff for schlubs like us to talk about. So I would love to sit down with whatever one or two people voted for LA to win the Western Conference and just pick their brain.
Okay.
I want to know what the logic is behind, what's the path? What's the pathway to the Los Angeles Lakers, who were in the play-in last year and lost in five games in the first round of the Denver Nuggets?
Okay.
What's the path to them winning a title this year? The realistic path in this West that's loaded.
Yeah.
With young up-and-coming teams. If I'm, like, genuinely, I'm not even saying this because I'm in Sacramento. If I'm picking a sixth team, I'm putting Sacramento ahead of LA.
Yeah. I would put New Orleans ahead of LA.
Probably put New Orleans for sure.
I would even like venture. I don't think I'd put the Grizzlies, but maybe.
I'd be close.
I think I'd put Golden State Warriors. I even like the Houston Rockets.
Yeah. This isn't just to make the playoffs. If you wanted to make the case, Lakers is 60, like, okay, I don't really agree with it, but I think I could probably hear it out.
Uh huh.
To win the Western Conference. To make the playoffs, and then to win three series?
Yeah.
What?
That's tough, dude.
I don't see it, dude.
I don't see it at all
Even
either.
Even if Dalton Connect is awesome. Like, let's say Dalton Connect is just year one ceiling. Is that enough? I don't think it's enough.
I don't think it's enough because, we've talked about this, sort of the players that they have that were injured last year that might be able to help out. And, you know, the Christian Woods, the, you know, that group of players they had, all Gabe Vincent, that all these players that were hurt, right? Jared Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that any of them are needle movers. Like, they didn't do anything. They lost Torian Prince. They didn't do anything. They got Dalton Connect. That's it.
And Bronny James.
And Bronny James. Yeah.
Which, and that's reflected. And again, this is why I don't want to, this isn't ripping ESPN and their voter, because they picked the LA to finish 11th.
Yeah.
In the West, which feels right to me.
It does. 10, that, 11.
That feels right. In that, they are in the mix. They were literally tied with Memphis and Houston. So they're in that mix. And then I think Golden State was like one game above all them. All those teams are just the mix and match. However, it might be an injury here. It might be a bad bounce there. It might be a bad call there that just kind of separates those teams.
Yep.
I don't have a problem with that. That's fine and fair. I think that's probably right. I saw this morning, and on my way to work, I was trying to figure out, okay, let's see what can I say, because I was going to do a role playing thing where you argue against the Lakers and I argue for them. I'm the person or people who voted for them.
Okay. This is new. We don't usually do that, but go ahead.
No, but I couldn't even fit. I didn't want to do the bit. I didn't want to do the bit because I don't have a good. I don't have a good answer. Mm-mm. Like sometimes Kenny and D'Lo will do this all the time, where Kenny will play one of his various characters, and D'Lo will ask him questions as that character. And Kenny at least has a like, oh, okay, I see the thought. Like, I don't agree with it, but I see where that person's thought process is.
Yeah.
I can't. Well, they have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. That's the extent. That's as far
it
as
wasn't
I got.
Enough. It wasn't enough last year, and they were.
They were awesome.
Those two were awesome, and it wasn't enough, and they didn't do anything.
Right, and that's what. Even if Anthony Davis played 40 games last year, and LeBron James looked like a 39-year-old last year.
Yep.
At least then, maybe you go, well, they'll bounce back. Hey, they'll be better this year, and then you get. Like I said, I don't agree with it, but at least that's, you got basically like the peak of what you can expect to get from LeBron James and Anthony Davis, your two best players. You basically got the peak of what you could expect to get from those guys last year.
Are we still expecting Austin Reeves to just take this huge leap? I mean, look, he went from 13 points to 15.9 in a year. He bumped his assist numbers to 5.5, but
does Austin Reeves ever average 20 points in a season on a title contender?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No.
He might get there, but on a version of the Lakers that's not really competing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
If he's like the leftover after LeBron retires, mm-hmm. and he's a guy who's got to put up 20 just to mm-hmm. just because someone has to.
And I'm sure there's Laker fan listening to this who's screaming at the radio like, well, Jared Vanderbilt was hurt and Gabe Vincent was hurt. Like, okay. They needed a needle mover. It's the same. It's a lot like the Kings last offseason, where in retrospect, I don't want to relitigate their last offseason. I think they did the right thing last year.
Uh-huh.
And they brought in Chris Duarte because you add some defense to the two guard spot, and okay, maybe you can be better defensively, and you kind of saw the vision, but you wanted to run it back and kind of see.
Mm-hmm.
That's ostensibly what the Lakers are doing, and we saw with the Kings it wasn't enough. And I.
And the Kings players weren't 32 years old with a long history of injuries and
turning 40,
39 going on 40. They weren't. Sure. They were still players that had, you know, an ability to raise their ceiling.
Yeah.
And at least maintain where they were.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, man. I was part of these lists forever. They send you out a long sheet of things, hey, check boxes, mm-hmm. and send them in. I mean, we used to do the top 450. Where we'd go through and rank the top 450 players. And there were
nightmare.
There were over 100 of us. So like the panel of experts was huge. Even still, like Tim Bontemps reaches out for his MVP ladder and
straw poll.
I give him the straw poll, mm-hmm. like the MVP straw poll every single mm-hmm. like every 2 weeks or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So I understand why I put guys where I put them and stuff uh-huh. like that. But yeah, it's just interesting that this is that there's someone out there who believes that that's gonna be a possibility.
Here's
for
a little
them to
blurb.
Win the title.
Here's a little blurb. Kevin Durant's Phoenix Suns and LeBron James' Los Angeles Lakers round out our panel's top six. Will Durant and James be able to hold off the conference's new faces who are trying to take the reins in the West? No.
No.
It's a hard no for me.
Well, they didn't last year.
It didn't last year.
Yeah.
Now he's going to be 40.
40. And his running mate is literally a dude who just like...
Who just played basketball all summer too.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I don't know, man. I don't know, man. We'll talk about the rest of this list, though. I really do want to get into the West because it's really, really interesting, so we'll get into that. But coming up next, Fantasy Friday, Faraz Siddiqui, Upper Hand Fantasy. It's an Odyssey podcast. Can't wait to chat football with Faraz. You're going to love that conversation. It's coming up next. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube's the sponsor. We're on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center. Yeah, it's a long one. There we go.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Someday we'll have a proper intro for our guy Faraz Siddiqui.
I always love that Faraz starts bobbing his head even though he can't hear the music. Because we are. He's part exactly. of the crew. He's part of the crew.
Faraz Siddiqui, Upper Hand Fantasy, joining us on a Friday. Faraz, hey, happy to have you back because not only, I mean, there's multiple reasons we love having you here. One, because you're a joy to talk to. You're one of our favorite guests. Actually, you know what? Our favorite guest. We don't have that many. You're easily at the top of the list.
You are our favorite guest.
But number two, it means football season's almost here. So welcome back, man. Happy to have you.
Thank you, guys. You guys are so nice to me. I don't know why, but you guys are so nice to me.
Well, you're great.
Yeah. Football's back. I'm so excited. You know, we only have one little weekend here left of preseason, and then week one is going to be upon us pretty soon, guys. I'm excited.
Can't wait. Real quick, before we get into the fantasy stuff, I know James got some questions about his team. We have a James fantasy jar this year where he has to put a dollar in whenever he asks about his own fantasy team. I just decided that on the spot.
Please do. Please do. It was getting out of control last year. It was just like all these questions were rolling in and James was just asking about his team. You know.
That's right. It. It's happening again. It's happening again.
How are you feeling? You're a Jets guy. How are you feeling about the Jets this year? Not necessarily from a fantasy perspective. Like I said, we'll get to the fantasy stuff, but I think I'm down on the Jets a little. Where do you land?
Well, it's a great way to open the show.
You're welcome.
Well, I think it's very similar to how it was going into last year, right? It's almost like the same thing. It's just like Aaron Rodgers, hopefully he's good. And this year it's like, well, he got hurt last year, so you know, I have that worry that, you know, is he going to be healthy enough and is he going to be able to like plant on his leg and, you know, throw the deep ball and all that kind of stuff. So there's a little bit of worry there, but we're excited, man. Really good defense. And I don't really care that you're down on them. I don't want to hear why. Whatever.
My opinion doesn't matter. I'm just a guy.
But I'm just saying, like, I am excited. But, as a Jets fan, like, no matter how good your team is on paper, you just have to temper your expectations, and that's what I do. I have very low expectations, so if they make the playoffs, I'll be so excited. If they go further than that, I'll be so excited. Do I think they're a Super Bowl caliber team? I do. I just do. I think that's an objective opinion, I would say, not a subjective one, I swear. But we'll see. I'm excited, though.
Okay, so I was watching some preseason football the other day, and first of all, the orange pants that the Broncos are wearing are the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. But the other thing was that Zach Wilson is wearing those orange pants. Just how excited are you that he's not wearing your Jets green?
Oh, I'm so excited. It was such an abomination to watch that. And Garrett Wilson just like having to deal with that all season long. It was so bad. And it's funny because Zach got benched and then he had to like come in to play because the other quarterbacks got hurt and all that. And it was just like the team, you know, morale just like dropped every single time Zach Wilson was behind center. So I'm happy. I'm happy he's gone.
For us, Siddiqui, Upper Hand Fantasy, it's an Odyssey podcast. You can get that wherever you get your podcasts. We got fantasy drafts coming up. I know James, yours is in a couple of weeks. Mine starts next Monday.
Getting my dollars.
Oh yeah, he's
ready.
Getting his dollars. but for us, we'll stick with the Jets with Christian McCaffrey's calf injury that has held him out for all of the preseason and most of training camp. Does that change who is 1.1 to you?
I don't think so. I'm not really too worried about the calf injury. There's a very, very low re-injury rate when it comes to running backs and calf injuries. He's had a pretty extensive time to rest with this injury, and it's a minor one, so I'm not really concerned. I think if there was a game happening like this weekend, he would play.
Right.
So I'm not really worried about it. 1-on-1, I think it's Christian McCaffrey pretty easily, and I'm not really thinking twice, to be honest.
I started real quick, James. Sorry. I started to ask that question because I wanted to ask about Breece Hall, and then it landed on Christian McCaffrey. Where does Breece Hall land for you? Because I know there were people talking about him as possibly being the number one overall pick if McCaffrey's calf injury was worse than expected.
He's my RB2 behind Christian McCaffrey. So, I'm very high on him. I think he could end up as the RB1 this year, but I'm not going to draft him over Christian McCaffrey, somebody who has proved – you know, every year when he's healthy, he is he gives you the biggest positional advantage in football, in fantasy football. So I'm taking him, but I wouldn't surprise me at all if Breece Hall ended up as the overall RB1 this year.
All right. So for us, Kyle and I were discussing this the other day. We're wondering, and it plays into a bigger question that I'll ask afterwards, but how many fantasy football drafts are you actually in every year?
In regular season long, like managed drafts, where I have to like pick up guys and set my lineups and stuff like that, probably like 20. But if you talk about like best ball drafts, like hundreds.
Okay.
A thousand.
Wow.
Good Lord.
So you're...
Because I have been drafting best ball. I've been doing best ball drafts like all off season long, pretty much. And there's no management there, right? So it's just like you draft and you're done. So yeah, I'm in a lot.
That's absolutely... Okay, so how many actual live drafts do you do where you're there with a group of people, or is that not even a thing for you anymore?
Oh, just one.
Okay.
It's my home league, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, I would say... I already did one live draft with a bunch of people that I don't really care about. I hope they don't listen to this. But my home
league... They're avid listeners.
They, they, my home league, you know, I draft, we're actually drafting next weekend in Atlantic City. And it's going to be great. I can't wait. My, one of my favorite days of the year, right?
Oh,
when I draft with my local, with my home leagues, my guys, you know, it's one of my, it's a holiday for me. I love it.
Yeah, it is a holiday for us too. Like, Kyle knows it. Like, this will be my 35th year playing fantasy football. And I think 32 of those I've had one league. We've actually had a couple players pass away. Like, it's just, we've had the league forever. Wow. But it's like, I bring nachos every year. Like, it's one day out of the year that I get to see everybody. I think the bigger question I was getting, so if you're doing 20 regular everyday football leagues, and those are a minimum of 10-man leagues, but probably 12-man. So let's just say you're doing roughly, like, there's 240 players you're playing against. How are you going to manage the crowd this year with all the turnover at the running back position? Because you and I both know there's going to be at least, like, three dudes in every single one of those drafts who walk in and are unprepared and have no idea that, like, 14 different running backs are in different positions, different places this year.
You know, I think for those type of casual leagues where there are going to be players who aren't really sure what's happening, you got to take advantage and, you know, go after your guys. Like, every single time you're almost on the clock, you're kind of hoping that those guys are drafting before or ahead of you. If you can choose your draft slot and you know who those people are going to be, you want to be around them, right? Because there's a good chance that they're not going to snipe your guys. Like, if you're paying attention all offseason long and you know who you want and you know who the guys to draft are, and they haven't been paying attention like you, draft around them if you can, because there's a good chance that you'll end up getting your guy.
Faraz Siddiqui, Upper Hand Fantasy, joining us now. When I want to talk about just kind of draft strategy overall, because I know when I first started playing in kind of the mid-2000s, it was running back, running back, running back. You want running backs. That's the big thing. But then it kind of started to shift where running backs became a little bit less, the workhorse back started to kind of go by the wayside a little bit in the NFL. So it started being receiver, 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 depending on the, you know, depending on the league you're in your scoring system. Do you see that evolving a little bit with all the running back movement now, or are you still leaning receiver above running back, just kind of in general?
Yeah, I think as an industry and as these drafts are happening, you can look at the ADP and it's looking like mostly receivers at the top, right? Now, if you end up having guys like Breece Hall and Bijan Robinson and Christian McCaffrey all doing their thing this year, Kyren Williams potentially, right? Like, next year in 2025, you are going to see those guys probably get drafted within the top five, six guys, right? But also, you got to keep in mind, too, that there's a lot of instability at the top of the wide receiver position right now. CeeDee Lamb's looking for a new contract. Ja'Marr Chase is looking for a new contract. Are there going to be holdouts there? You're kind of worried about that. Justin Jefferson has Sam Darnold throwing to him. So there are a few things near the top, you know, of that list where you're just kind of, you know, iffy about, right? And I think there are tiebreakers. So if you're looking to kind of not have to worry about those situations, you know, maybe you end up going with a Breece Hall or Bijan Robinson over some of these top wide receivers. But I do think that at the end of the day, like, for me personally, I'm still cool drafting two running backs, you know, with my first two picks. Sometimes I see Isaiah Pacheco there in the third round. I see Devon Achane in the third round. And I'm just like, all right, you know what? I'm triple dipping. They're going to be my flex, whatever. And I'll just get some wide receiver value wherever I can.
Yeah.
A lot of leagues, too, they go three wide receivers, right? They start three wide receivers plus the flex. So that's another reason why you end up seeing wide receivers going a little bit early as well.
Yeah, we talked about this last year. It felt like there were a ton of really good wide receivers last year. And I think at the end of the season, either had five or six guys with 1,000 yards, eight-plus touchdowns, seven touchdowns, stuff like that. Do you feel like it's going to be another one of those? You talked about the instability at the top, but the overall depth at the wide receiver position still feels like it's there for this season, you know, even more so than the running back position.
I think I do. I think it's a lot easier to hit on a wide receiver that's going to perform for you every week than it is on a running back, like later in drafts, right? Obviously, you're going to hit, and people are going to hit on some of these running backs, but it's not a guarantee, right? Like, good luck trying to figure out Zach Moss and Chase Brown. Like, you might think you know what the answer is, but, like, you probably don't. And if you happen to choose right, you got lucky, okay? But, you know, you can grab these Chiefs wide receivers, right? Sixth, seventh round, right? Any of them. Like, you can get Rashee Rice. Hopefully he doesn't get suspended. It's looking less and less likely, you know, by the day that he gets suspended this year. His trial date, by the way, is in December. So take advantage of that value there. He was a wide receiver one once he got full route participation after week 12 last year. And then you have, you know, Xavier Worthy, the rookie. He's playing, you know, on every snap with Patrick Mahomes in the preseason, you know, and Hollywood Brown, obviously, when he comes back, this is looking like an 11 personnel, three wide receiver system where Patrick Mahomes is just going to be going crazy. Like, you can get all those guys sixth, seventh round, right? You have Chris Godwin, who's moving into the slot this year. You can get him in the sixth, seventh round. So there's a lot of receivers. I think, you know, Deontay Johnson, who is the number one wide receiver for the Panthers now, it doesn't look like an amazing situation, but in a PPR league, he can give you 150 targets pretty easily. He's that type of player. So there's a lot of value, I think, later in drafts. You just kind of have to know which guys to target.
Okay, so I was going to ask you about Brandon Ayuk, but I'll put a pin in that for a second because you just brought up a player like Deontay Johnson. I had a friend reach out to me, and he said, hey, I'm doing a draft. Deontay Johnson or Nico Collins? And to me, in that scenario, I'm leaning toward Nico Collins, even though it's a more crowded wide receiver room with Tank Dell, and now they have Stephon Diggs there. But I'm taking the better quarterback over the worst quarterback and the worst offense, even though the volume might be there for Deontay Johnson. Where do you land on in a situation like that?
Well, you know, just to give you some context here, Kyle, Nico Collins is going in the third round of fantasy drafts. And Deontay Johnson is going in like the eighth, ninth round right now.
All right, so maybe it wasn't a draft, but it was choosing between those two players in some way.
He's probably choosing based on the round, like a keeper league potentially. And you kind of have to choose, like, you know, I can keep Nico for a fifth rounder, but I can keep Deontay for like an 11th rounder, right? Like, what should I choose? And in that scenario, it's a lot closer, right? But for me personally, I am on the side of the argument that Nico is an elite wide receiver. I think a lot of people might not view him in the same breath as like the Drake Londons, the Chris Olaves, the Garrett Wilsons of the world, but he's up there, guys. And it's one of those situations where I think we're going to find out this year. You know, there's a Stephon Diggs is there. I think he's a better receiver at this point in their careers than Stephon Diggs. That says a lot, but like it is what it is. And I think people will start to catch up with that a little bit. Tank Dell is a very good wide receiver as well. So that trio is serious. So, you know, I personally am going to go Nico Collins every time. I have him in my top 12 fantasy wide receivers this year. Deontay Johnson is in my top 36. But I think it's because the quality of that offense, quarterback situation. Also, you know, he's not necessarily like a big play guy like Nico can be. So there's a lot of different, you know, reasons why, you know, you would have someone like Nico like way above Deontay.
For us, the last couple of years, we've seen a change with wide receiver position. For years, it was that you can draft a rookie wide receiver, but he's got to be your fifth or your sixth wide receiver, and you're hoping that he might get to 800 yards and something. But all of a sudden, there's this like cosmic shift where guys are coming into the league and having a huge impact early on. Who is that player for you or the group of players this year that you circle and say, okay, a rookie wide receiver that could just absolutely blow up and maybe get you 1,200 yards, maybe be a number two or a number three wide receiver?
You know, I think because of last year, you know, we've seen the Pukas of the world. We've seen the Jamar Chases of the world a couple years ago, Justin Jeffersons. You know, when you really look at it, like you look at it from the year 2000, there's only been six rookie wide receivers who end up putting up top 12 fantasy points for the season, or at least average that for the season. So we have to kind of temper expectations for rookie wide receivers as a whole. But, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., is walking into a situation where he could end up top 12, right? He has the pedigree. He is an elite prospect. He is the de facto number one wide receiver for Kyler Murray, who is a very good quarterback. Mm-hmm. So in that situation, it's kind of like the perfect storm there where they needed a wide receiver. They have somebody in Trey McBride who could be a very, very good supporting player to him, who, by the way, is my tight end one on the season.
Wow.
But at the end of the day, we could see a top 15 wide receiver and, you know, top two or three tight end on that offense. So Malik Nabers, obviously somebody else who is just very similar situation in terms of target share. He could end up getting 25, 26% target share with the elite guys, but the quality of the offense, the quality of the targets might not be as good as Marvin Harrison's. But if you're getting 150 targets, it's very, very hard not to finish like top 15, right? Like, it's just hard for that to happen. And he has the playmaking ability on top of that, right? Think about You know, Eli Manning, when OBJ was a rookie, when he came in, you know, Eli Manning, we weren't looking at that situation like Eli Manning was going to elevate OBJ. OBJ did it all by himself. Mm-hmm. And then Eli Manning ended up supporting him. It could be a similar situation with Daniel Jones.
For us, Siddiqui, Upper Hand Fantasy, it's an Odyssey podcast. You can get the Upper Hand Fantasy podcast wherever you get your pods. Also, upperhandfantasy.com. I want to talk veteran wide receivers here for a second. If somebody is drafting, let's say, tomorrow on Saturday or maybe Sunday, and the Brandon Ayuk situation has not been resolved, how are you handling Brandon Ayuk and, you know, George Kittle and Debo Samuel and the 49ers dominoes that fall with the Ayuk situation? How are you handling that going into drafts with so much uncertainty?
You know, I was honestly not really targeting Ayuk at his price anyway. And one of the reasons for that is because he is not going to give you 150, 160 targets.
No doubt.
You know, with Debo there, with Christian McCaffrey there, with George Kittle there. Last year, he went up with 1,300 yards, but it was because he was uber efficient. He was like one of the most efficient wide receivers. He had more than 18 yards per reception. Like it's absolutely crazy. He's just not sustainable, right? So if he gets a similar type of target volume this year, the efficiency is not going to be the same. He is due for a regression. It's going to be a similar role that he was in last year. Just because they give him a contract that they do, that doesn't mean he's going to get more targets this year. He's an important player for them, no doubt. Now, if he moves to another team, right, and he ends up as their number one wide receiver, I think that is a Stephon Diggs-like situation where you go from a team that wasn't giving you the targets, you have the talent to be an elite wide receiver, you go somewhere else and you end up with 160 targets, and you could end up being really elite for fantasy. I don't think Ayuk is elite for fantasy just yet. He could end up being that guy, depending on where he goes, but it's a tough situation. Like, if he goes to Pittsburgh, like, do we really have confidence that he'll be putting up a lot of numbers, a lot of touchdowns, even though he's elite? Maybe not, right? Arthur Smith, that quarterback situation, that offensive line, Patriots, you know, maybe there's a similar thing. I actually think he would be a better fit in New England for fantasy just because he'll get 170 targets as the clear, clear wide receiver one there. But I think I'm just avoiding just because of what the best case scenario would be in San Francisco. It might not be that great.
I'm going to stay in the same vein, and I'm going to throw in my first dollar. The CeeDee Lamb situation in Dallas is somewhat similar to what's happening with Ayuk, except for he is a legitimate 140, 150 target per year guy if he's going to be there and he's going to be healthy and he's going to be happy. But I get to keep two, and I'm choosing between him and Puka Nacua. Like, where do I go with one guy who's sitting out and who knows what's going to happen with his contract? And another guy who is a second-year guy who looks incredible too, but we're talking about two top five, top six wide receivers. One has maybe a higher ceiling. So how would you manage that situation?
Well, CeeDee Lamb, you know, it's really tough. I don't see these guys holding out personally. You know, I know, you know, they might not end up getting paid. They might not end up getting their contracts, but there's too much money on the line for them to miss games. I don't see it happening. So personally, I'm perfectly fine taking, you know, CeeDee Lamb as the 102. If you really want to avoid that situation, like the worst case scenario there, and an unlikely scenario, I would probably go Tyreek Hill instead, because it's not as much risk there. But you know, I'm not playing that game. Like, I don't think it's a situation to really worry about, because a guy like CeeDee Lamb compared to Puka Nacua, like, he has way more week winning weeks. He has way more, you know, just overall upside as the primary target for a fast paced pass first offense than Puka Nacua does with someone like Cooper Kupp, who, by the way, is pretty healthy going into the year. You know, when they were together on the field, they put up very similar numbers. So, you know, and a lot of reports, you know, Jordan Rodriguez, the beat reporter for the Rams, talking about, you know, this offense going through Cooper Kupp right now in practice, in training camp. So, you know, that's something to consider when you're thinking about, you know, drafting Puka Nacua as early as the later first round.
I'm high on the Rams, though. I think the Rams are going to be good this year.
Yeah, you're very high on the Rams.
I'm high on the Rams.
Yeah, they were so good when their running back was healthy.
Yeah. For us, hey, we're going to get you out of here. I know you got stuff to go do today. We really appreciate you taking your time out on this Friday, and hopefully we will do it again very soon.
100%. I appreciate you guys. Talk soon.
Thanks, Faraz. See you, bud.
Good seeing you, man.
There he goes, Faraz Siddiqui. Upper Hand Fantasy, upperhandfantasy.com. You can get that podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. That is the Upper Hand Fantasy Pod.
Yeah, and make sure you follow him on Instagram too. He does all kinds of Instagram videos that are incredible.
There's so much content.
Yeah, tons of content, and he's absolutely spectacular.
And you never know, my favorite thing about Upper Hand is, or the Instagram account specifically,
yeah,
is you're just scrolling. You may not even be thinking about fantasy football, but you're just scrolling Instagram, you know, whatever, whenever, whether you're sitting on the couch or maybe you're in the bathroom or whatever, and you're scrolling, and all of a sudden, you know what? Hey, this little fantasy nugget there.
When I'm scrolling and I see Faraz, I'm like, oh, I need to hear Faraz's voice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm going to learn something right now.
I am going to learn something right now. He's going to tell me something that I'm not going to hear anywhere else, like just something random and weird. And I'm sitting there like, oh, okay, I'm doing the math in my head. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I'm all in.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Yeah.
You just locking that info away. I don't even need to research.
2,000 fantasy drafts. Is that what he said?
That's the move, though. That's so much, because in best ball, you just draft a team and then you score points, but it's just your top performers.
Okay.
All score.
Huh.
So you don't have to do anything. You just draft it. It's if your favorite part of fantasy football is the draft and then you don't want to deal with it again, play best ball.
Okay. I don't think I've ever played best ball.
Huh. Sounds great.
Yeah.
I haven't either. I've talked about it a lot. I've had friends who do it. I've never done it.
I don't know. It's just crazy when he's telling us how many leagues he's playing
20,
in.
20 redraft leagues?
Oh, man.
Is a lot.
Yeah, because you need to know the rules for all of those leagues.
You need to know the rules. And then you run into the issue. People have this with two fantasy leagues.
Oh, yeah.
Where I have George Kittle and I'm down by 6 in one league, but then I'm facing George Kittle in another league and I'm up by 6.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, it's a lose-lose.
It is a lose-lose. I don't know how you manage that. And, you know, he's a guy who has a reputation as a fantasy expert.
Right.
So you need to perform in those leagues. Yeah.
So Danny Kelly, friend of the program, host of the Ringer Fantasy Football Show, I've actually asked him because he's the same kind of deal. Just dozens of fantasy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I asked him how he met, like, I said, how do you deal with this? And he basically says by the middle of the year,
mm-hmm.
you have X amount of teams that are actually, so you might start with, let's say, 20, and you might have 8 who are legitimately
in
like contenders. You know, you might make the playoffs in more than that, but you have, you know what your teams look like, you know who's performing well, and you start to kind of look ahead and you go, okay, these are the 8 or so teams. And then by the fantasy playoffs, it's like, okay, these are the 2 or 3 teams that really have a shot.
Yeah.
And you just kind of whittle things down that way.
That's crazy. I'm sure it's a moneymaker for him, so good for him.
I hope so. I sure hope so. Love for Oz, Fantasy Fridays. Like I said, we're in talks.
We're in talks.
In talks with Faraz to have him back each and every Friday.
Yeah, I'm fingers crossed.
Can't wait.
He's my favorite.
All right, let's get back to some NBA stuff, and we'll also talk Raiders, Niners. Their preseason finales are tonight against each other at Allegiant Stadium. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We are on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
Welcome back to hour number 2 of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number 2, I'm Kyle Madsen, that's James Hamm. Jiffy Lube's the sponsor. We're hanging out with you until noon here on Sacramento's Sports Leader. Then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC will take you not into the weekend.
No.
Because we're not done after D'Lo and KC. Because we are carrying the Raiders versus 49ers preseason game tonight, 6:30 p.m. Raider Nation Radio, Niners at Raiders at Allegiant Stadium. Kickoff for that game is at 7:00. Can't wait. Fired up.
Yeah.
The Niners are going to be playing their starters. The Raiders are not. I'm guessing the fact that the Raiders are not playing their starters could change how much the 49ers starters play.
Oh.
Yeah, I think they're just, if you're running out against backups who are running around trying to make a roster spot or climb up the depth chart, just I think increases the risk of injury a little bit versus it's just starters going out there trying to get a couple of hits in.
Yeah. I'd still do what I wanted to. Like, whatever you were planning on doing for the first quarter, just do that.
Although, dude, after the way the Brock Purdy stuff went in the second preseason game where he just looked like a mess.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say he did not. Well, the one throwback across the field was a disaster, but he got smoked on one throw as he was throwing. And then he got hit again. He got hit twice in two series. If that's how it's going to be up front, if that's how it's going to be with the offensive line, I don't want him playing more than a series or two.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, like maybe two series and then out. I want to make sure he has an offensive line in there too. I know that there's always going to be the situation that you don't have Trent Williams still. That's one that's just kind of sneaking in under the radar. Like, when are they just going to figure out the Trent Williams thing?
Okay, so here's the... So Trent Williams, if you've been living under a rock, has been holding out. He hasn't reported to camp at all.
Yep.
And it's been one of those things because the Brandon Ayuk one is the high-profile one. The Brandon Ayuk one is, here's this all-pro 26-year-old receiver, wants a new contract. Though there might be a trade. There's just all this drama, right? But the Trent Williams one has kind of been flying under the radar, even though it's a way bigger deal.
Way bigger deal.
From a standpoint of like the importance of the player.
Well, yeah. I mean, in all reality, I will continue. Trent, that is one of the most loaded teams we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. The San Francisco 49ers. Yeah. I mean, they have superstars at linebacker, at defensive end, and running back, like the best player on that team, I will still hold this to be my opinion, is Trent Williams. Yeah, like for me, he's
like
not
pound
only
for pound, yeah.
Yeah, he's the best player. He's a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer. And on top of that, he is the best at his position regardless of age. He's just incredible. And he means so much to that team. And we're just kind of like, he'll get there when he gets there.
Well, and that's, so I think that's why it's flown under the radar so much.
Yeah.
Because it's not like, oh, they might trade him. They're not trading Trent Williams.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll just get done, and he just doesn't want to participate in any training camp. So, but as we get to the Friday before final cuts, you're kind of looking and going, hey, are they going to get this done?
Mm-hmm.
Like, practices are over, training camp's over. If that's just what he wanted to hold out from, then you can get him back now. Why have you not hammered this out? Why is this not done yet?
I just think he knows what he's doing, and he's a guy who does the work outside, and you know, he knows the scheme, and you don't want him taking hits anyways. He wouldn't
have participated much in practice anyway.
No, you're just going to put him in bubble wrap so he's not standing there on the sidelines.
But the fact that there's nothing done yet is the point where I now insert that into the Brandon Ayuk situation, and the Trent Williams stuff is still going on.
Yeah.
Because, hey, we're all done with practice. Where you at?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on here?
I know. So, eventually you got to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My guess is that my theory is that it happens today. One of the two contracts happens today.
Well,
and I think the reason I say that is the Trey Lance trade happened with the Cowboys the day of the 49ers preseason finale last year.
Okay.
It was against the Chargers, I think it was, on August 25th.
Okay.
And so I kind of think that might be some form of hard deadline for the 49ers, where they're looking at this, they're going, okay, we have one preseason game to go, then we have 2 weeks basically of practice before the regular season opens. So let's start getting some things done. Trent Williams hasn't even reported yet, so he's not even on the 90-man roster. Final cuts are due Tuesday.
Final cuts?
Final cuts.
Wow.
Down to 53.
Wow. Okay.
So it's not it's final cuts to the initial 53-man roster. You can obviously cut and move players around whenever you want after that.
I always thought it was like it starts really big and then there's like a 10-man cut or 15-man cut and then there's a much bigger cut.
So there was. For a couple of years, you went from 90 to 85 to 80 to 53.
Okay.
But they have since scrapped that because teams need players, it turns out.
Mm.
Can you imagine if the Niners is banged up as they were this year, had to also do cuts along with it? That would have been tough.
No, totally.
So they just went back down to the one cut, and that is Tuesday, August 27th. So I think today we'll get one of the Brandon Ayuk or Trent Williams things ironed out.
Okay.
And then I would assume they'll probably aim to get the Trent Williams thing done first.
Okay.
Because then you put him on the roster and then cut someone to get him on the roster. Yeah, because Brandon Ayuk is on the roster. He reported. Trent Williams is not. So he does not factor into the 90-man right now.
Okay.
So yeah, I think the Trent Williams thing gets done today.
Okay.
That's my guess.
I hope it does. I hope that they're, that we know what's happening here. Like, it, just this dark cloud hanging over them.
It's weird. I can't even, here, let's do this. Because I can't decide. We've talked about the vibes with the 49ers. Rank these things in order from worst, least concerning to most concerning.
Okay.
The Brandon Ayuk contract, the Trent Williams contract, Christian McCaffrey's injury, Brock Purdy's week two preseason performance, and the specter of a Super Bowl hangover.
Okay, so if I'm ranking them, like in my head, number one is clearly the Brandon Ayuk situation.
That's the most concerning?
Yeah, it's the most concerning because I think it's got the most variables.
I would agree.
Right? Trent Williams, I consider it like the most important thing out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, in the grand scheme of things, I think it's just that he's not...
You're less concerned about that not getting done.
Yeah, because I honestly just think he's not wanting to be at training camp, and that's fine with me because he's been through a million of them.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put that at like number five, although I think it's, well, no, I'll probably put it at number four because I think it's really important. I'm not worried about Super Bowl hangover.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not worried about the Super
Bowl
hangover.
That's number two for me.
Okay.
Ayuk is most concerning, and then it's the Super Bowl hangover thing.
Okay.
Because this is multiple years of deep playoff runs. That's more hits and more games on these players' bodies.
Yep.
You start to worry about injury stuff. They had pretty good injury luck last year. You start to worry about injury stuff. You start to worry about the team and just kind of human nature.
Uh-huh.
And looking around and going, wow, it's really hard to lose a Super Bowl and then go back. And now we have this Ayuk stuff. Oh, and Ricky Pearsall, the first round pick, hasn't been able to practice. I know the Trent Williams stuff. And it just, I think human nature starts to settle in a little bit. And now you see them, okay, they lost week one because the Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams stuff lingered. Okay, and now they got to get back. I am very, very deeply concerned about the Super Bowl hangover and the 49ers winning like nine games this year.
Okay. I'm still, I would even say for me, I don't know why I'm not just super worried about it. So I'm going to go one is Ayuk, two, I know this sounds really strange, but the Brock Purdy performance just stands out as like, what are we doing? Number three is the McCaffrey situation because you want him 100% healthy and he's a guy who has not been 100% healthy throughout his career.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'd say Super Bowl hangover. Then final one, I would say Trent Williams because I just think Trent Williams is chilling.
Huh. Yeah, I've got Ayuk 1, Super Bowl hangover 2, McCaffrey injury 3.
Yeah.
And that's less this specific injury and more, hey, is this an omen? Is this a sign that, man, he had a ton of touches last year?
Yeah.
He had a deep playoff run. He turns 28, or he is 28. And now he's just already dealing with this calf thing. Number four is the Trent Williams contract situation behind that. I really think that's going to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And then five is Purdy's preseason. I don't care.
You don't care.
Much. Mm-mm.
No, I mean, that's very possible. And I probably would move McCaffrey number two. Like the McCaffrey situation, you're always worried about like what mileage does he have left?
It feels a little bit, we were talking about the Warriors some yesterday. It's not on this scale because the 49ers are just way more talented team top to bottom. But it does feel like how you said, man, you take Steph Curry out of the Warriors and yikes. And I wonder a little bit, if you remove Christian McCaffrey from the 49ers, not that it would be yikes, it'd still be good.
Mm-hmm.
But are they as effective?
No, I mean, that should be a major concern, especially with the running backs that they do have that have mm-hmm. never really been able to step up. And none of them do sort of what McCaffrey does.
No, nobody in the league really does.
No. I would say, like, and that's where we've talked about whether Mitchell will make the team or not. And, like, Elijah Mitchell at least has that speed and that burst and all that stuff
mm-hmm.
That makes you feel like, okay, he might be able to do, like, some third down stuff. But I would still be majorly concerned if he's not healthy. And,
yeah,
like, look, like, the Madden curse, it's always in the back of your mind. It's something that, I mean, it's not real, but it's, you know, it feels like it was real for a long time.
It's, you know what? I know it sounds ridiculous. It yep. sounds illogical, but it's just there.
Yeah.
And it just, when you talk about vibes, because vibes are illogical. I want to let everybody know I understand that.
Yeah.
I understand it's not a real thing. It's just a feeling I have. My feeling about a thing might be different than person X, Y, and Z's feelings about a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're just stacking things up about all the things that kind of have gone wrong or have been a little weird or just gotten off to a little bit of a weird start for the 49ers.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's another thing. Like, hey, by the way, there's also this.
Yeah.
Just that. Like I said, illogical. The Madden curse, quote unquote, has been, I don't want to say disproven, but yeah. like overcome. It's been fine, whatever. But when you start talking to me about the season and you throw that in, it's like, God, you're right. I got to consider that.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're both baseball guys, so we're both superstitious, and we both look at it and like, at the end of the day, I know how much McCaffrey means to the team. And I think it's interesting the way that McCaffrey, like over the last couple of weeks, has been portrayed, even by like Kyle Shanahan, about just how obsessive he is about the game of football. And it makes you wonder, how long will McCaffrey play? Like, what is his, like, sort of, like, you always worry that, you know, he's the modern running back just doesn't last. And McCaffrey's got so, you know, when he does play, when he is healthy, mm-hmm. he's got so much mileage. And I think that that's something that, you know, it makes sense that the 49ers draft running backs in the third and fourth rounds all the time. It doesn't make any sense that they can't get it right. But right. but I look at it, I'm like, it does make sense that they try to go out and bring in these guys that they think can help and take some of the pressure off of McCaffrey.
Yeah.
End of the day, there's no way to replace him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really difficult. There's no way to find the next Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah.
And you can do everything in your power to try to like draft running backs that you think might mm-hmm. like fill the void, but when he's gone, it's going to be a gigantic hole in mm-hmm. your roster, and mm-hmm. you got to find a way to. You should have already found a way to replace some of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want him running 24 times a game and then catching another 6 balls.
Mm-hmm.
Like he should not get 30 touches in a game, and it's not because. He like what he does with those 30 touches is amazing and he's incredible. But the fact is, like, there's only so many touches that every player has, right? As far as a running back, there's only so many runs, so many hits that you can take, and you're counting them up, and it's starting to get higher and higher at this point with him.
I'm trying to see. I'm not even that concerned about 30 touches in a game because I don't think he even got there last year.
Wow.
I'm looking real quick.
He never had?
No.
Wow.
But it is a lot of, here's a 25, 23,
yeah.
23, 27, 21. It's pretty regularly up around or north of 20.
Yeah.
And that's what I would like to see differently from them this year is not cutting it back because, again, he's just way too important to not have on the field that often, but can you take these 22 carries against the Steelers in a 30-7 win? Can that be 14? Can Elijah Mitchell or Jordan Mason handle 8 of those? It's the 27 touches in a 35-16 win over the Cardinals. Like, does he need those 20? Is
yeah.
Can we do 21?
Yeah. What are we doing there?
Can somebody else? He had 18. He had 20 carries in that game. That's what 21 carries in a 27-14 win over Tampa Bay. He also had 5 catches in that game.
Yeah.
31-13 win over Seattle. 24 touches. 45-29 win over Arizona. He had 23 touches. You know, it's those kind of games that I wonder, again, not saying to cut his cut his involvement in half, but can he get 6 carries for Jordan Mason? Can he get 3 or 4 carries for Elijah Mitchell? Especially in a game where you've got it put away pretty early.
Yeah.
And you're just burning clock for most of the second half.
No, I totally agree. And not only that, but you're so good offensively. Can you have a couple more games where it's a lopsided score and you can do that?
Mm-hmm.
Where you thrash somebody and mm-hmm. there shouldn't be the need to have him out there. And develop somebody. Develop somebody with... They need NFL carries. They need mm-hmm. NFL opportunities as a receiver. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to figure out a way to do it.
I am kind of interested with their running backs tonight against Las Vegas. And again, no starters for the Raiders tonight against the 49ers at Allegiant Stadium. Aiden O'Connell's not even going to play.
Wow.
The backup quarterback. Gardner Minshew's QB1, obviously not playing. Aiden O'Connell's not going to play either, according to Antonio Pierce, the Raiders head coach. What I would like to see from the 49ers tonight is, well, Christian McCaffrey already know is out. But I think we're going to learn a lot about where Jordan Mason and Elijah Mitchell kind of stand. Because Elijah Mitchell has been hurt most of the preseason.
Yeah.
So what's his role here?
Yeah.
And if he plays tonight and Jordan Mason does not, or if Jordan Mason gets the first snaps of the game and then he comes out and it's Elijah Mitchell rolling with Cody Schrader and Isaac Guerrero. I think we're going to learn a lot about where the 49ers land with Elijah Mitchell, because you talked about developing a running back. Well, Jordan Mason is the undrafted guy. He's been with the team for a couple of years now. This is year 3. I think he has 83 carries across 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's always run hard. He's always run well when he's gotten his opportunities. If he has surpassed Elijah Mitchell on the depth chart, and Elijah Mitchell's a good player.
Yeah.
But if he has surpassed him on the depth chart, I don't know what Elijah Mitchell does here. I don't know what his role is.
No, that's tough, especially
because he doesn't play special teams.
It feels like you're going to go, you might keep one young guy, and then would they keep Breida, who might be more versatile?
Maybe.
And I don't think that they're going to, I mean, I wouldn't just say, oh, they're going to keep him at all. But
yeah. But
we all know that Kyle Shanahan likes the backs that he's comfortable with. That he, mm-hmm. you know, how many times did he bring like Coleman back? And you're like, okay, what are we doing here? Why is he on the roster? And it's like, okay, sure. Well, because number one, Kyle Shanahan running backs get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Their zone blocking, whatever it is, like their guys get hurt. But mm-hmm. then on top of that, he always has this mindset of, let me stay with what I know. Let me be conservative with my roster construction when it comes to the running back position.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe he's more conservative in that position than any other. And maybe that's why some of these guys never develop. Because they're never truly given the opportunity. Like,
mm-hmm.
earning his trust is not easy.
That is my big concern. They spent a first round pick on Ricky Pearsall, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pearsall had a hamstring thing. He had a shoulder thing. Has barely practiced and won't play at all in the preseason. We know this is a notoriously hard offense for rookie receivers to understand and to get and to grasp. Mm-hmm. So now you have this injury-prone first-round pick who may or may not even get enough reps to get on the field in year one? This is... I don't want to overreact.
Yep.
But we talked about on... I can't remember if we talked about it on this show, too, but we talked about it on Candlestick Chronicles for sure. Subscribe, rate, review, wherever you get your podcasts. Isaac Guerrero... Not Isaac Guerrero, but Renardo Green, the cornerback, second round pick, Dominic Pooney, third round pick, offensive lineman, wide receiver Jacob Cowing, fourth round pick, all have performed well enough in the preseason that their arrow is trending up.
Yes.
Again, not saying they're going to start and be awesome and be amazing, but like their trajectory is on the right path right now, given what we know about them. Ricky Pearsall, it's trajectory down. Yeah. Isaac Arendo, fourth round running back, trajectory down. Malik Mustafa, another one trending up. But that's a problem, dude. Again, not writing off Ricky Pearsall. But when your first round pick looks like he's not going to be ready to contribute at all by the start of the regular season, that's a tough go, dude.
Well, I think it's a tough go, Kyle, because there were starting offensive linemen right there that could have helped you.
Maybe.
That would have been, like, starting.
Maybe.
There's a potential for that. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think they've done well because Pooney does look like he's going to be starter caliber. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But could you not have bolstered, like, your defensive line?
Well, that's like, the bigger deal, because we've heard from Kyle Shanahan and Chris Forster, the offensive line coach, going to get the playmakers before the offensive linemen. And Kyle Shanahan told Tim Kawakami, and we talked about it on this show, the TK show, an Odyssey podcast. But you and I talked about it, how Shanahan basically said, we thought the guys in the back of the first round had as much chance to be an NFL starter as the guys in the third round.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, that actually tracks to me. But you just said it. Defensive line, they're defensive. We always talk, oh man, what a defensive line. It's like Nick Bosa and Leonard Floyd and Javon Hargrave and...
yeah.
Like, they have other guys, Jordan Elliott and Malik Collins and Yeter Gross-Matos, and they have... But this, like, depth and this just crush of defensive linemen that they're going to... bring them in waves throughout the game. And it's just not there. Their defensive line depth is just not there.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. They 100% could have gone that route instead at the end of the first round. And instead they picked up a wide receiver who may or may not be ready to play in year one or ever.
Mm. Tough, man. Right. Hey, look, that's in order to stay on top.
About the 49ers.
In order to stay on top, you can't miss in the middle rounds of the draft.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult. And they found superstars there. Mm-hmm. What they haven't found is solid base hits.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough. Like, you can't waste your third and fourth round picks and not have at least guys that can be rotational guys at crucial positions on the field.
And maybe they did that this year.
Yeah.
Renardo Green might be good. Dominic Pooney might be good. Malik Mustafa and Jacob Cowing, maybe they're all good.
Yeah, it sounds good.
And maybe this draft is going to be fine. But man, the Ricky Pearsall one is tough.
Yep. Right.
That got way off track.
Way off track.
I mean, on track, but further.
I don't even have today's rundown. So, I mean, we're just going.
This is yesterday's rundown that I'm.
Yeah, we're just like, whatever.
Just winging it. that's James. I'm Kyle. Jiffy Lube's a sponsor. The handoff. One of D lowercase. I don't know which one. They'll be in about 20 minutes right here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Theater.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
You gotta Google it. Drew down in the chat. That was for him. That was a joke for one person.
One person. There it is.
At 95.7 The Game, they have a drop of Trent Baalke with his super raspy-ass voice going, you gotta Google it.
You gotta Google it.
I can't do the voice. Wow. Yeah, shout out to Mitch. And Mitch, call in if you'd like. He's tweeting at me. So Mitch in New Jersey, people familiar with the show will know Mitch. He's tweeting at me, but there's something in Twitter called communities now. And I think it's kind of like, it's like a Discord channel kind of. So you can go into the Sacramento Kings community, for example.
Yep.
And send tweets into that community. Oh. But the only way you can respond to those tweets if you were in that community... And so Mitch has tagged me in the Clippers and Trojans, USC Trojans, have to specify, USC Trojans community tweeting at me, and I can't reply because they're in these communities.
Oh, that's weird.
Really, really odd.
Well, Kyle, clearly you should just join those communities.
I'm not going to actually do that.
Don't
you know?
Join any communities, Kyle. Don't do it.
I'm not.
Hmm.
Why would I do that? No, I'm dead serious.
I'm with you.
Why would I do that?
Yeah, don't do it.
If he did that in the Sacramento Kings, like, sure, I'll jump in there and I'll figure out what I got to do to reply to Mitch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. I don't want to say I don't care about the Clippers. I don't want to be in whatever realm Clippers fans exist in. Same thing, USC. I have a couple of friends who are USC football fans.
Yep.
That's enough. I'm good.
Okay.
My mother-in-law went to USC, huge SC football fan.
Mm.
That's all I need.
You could have her go in and infiltrate the community and talk to Mitch.
I'm not going
to
do that. I'm not subjecting my mother-in-law, who I love very much, to Twitter. I'm not doing that. No, no, no. Absolutely not.
That's hilarious.
Should I? that's a good point by Polo in the chatty house. Kyle and Casey in LA. Yeah, should I just, okay, clip show.
Okay, clip show.
Somebody get it. Who is this? Hello. Don, you're on the Insiders. What's up?
How you doing?
Who is this?
Hey, I got a suggestion. If I was a Coach Brown, the first thing I'd tell the Kings, which is probably going to get us 1 to 2 more games, and that's what I was going to explain briefly on the radio.
Okay, that's perfect. Let me put you on hold, and the guys will pick it up for you, all right?
Thank you.
Okay, what you said your name was Don?
Sam, S-A-M.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, Don. Hey, Don, you're on the Insiders with Kyle and James. What's up?
Hey, this is Sam, but that's okay.
Oh, sorry, our call screener got it wrong.
Don't call me late for dinner. Hey, listen, here's what I think about the Kings can pick up 1 to 2 more games. So if I was Brown at the very start of the season, I would say we're not going to be screaming at the referees anymore. If you have a problem with the call, they're not going to change it, so don't scream at them up and down the court. When there's a timeout or something like that, walk over and quietly talk to them and let them say why they missed it or what happened, and you say it, and then move on. And that will get us probably at least 2 50-50 calls throughout the game. But, you know, like, I hate to say it, but the big dummy, he used to scream at the refs every play, and that hurt us at the end of the game. So
Draymond.
If I was Brown, that's what I'd tell him.
Perfect. Thanks, Sam. Appreciate the call. Sure.
Okay.
It's that easy.
It is.
Isn't that, that's one of those, the yelling at the refs thing is one of those things that as a fan, and there are people, Draymond Green, when DeMarcus Cousins was here.
Yeah.
Luka Doncic, who just the whole game. And it's like, okay, this is a problem. But when it's, I understand though, because you're just heat of the moment, you're competitive, something happens and something doesn't go your way, you're gonna be upset in some way.
Yep.
And there are guys who don't. There are guys who, you know, they might look at the ref and toss their hands up, but then they go on about their day. But man, I get it. When if you're De'Aaron Fox and you do a rip through move and you get hacked and there's no call and now it's 2 points the other way when it should have been 2 free throws for you, I understand you're mad. I get it. Like I said, it can be frustrating as a fan. You're going, hey, get back and just go play. Da, 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 da. But when you're heat of the moment, man, I can't begrudge somebody who's fired up at the ref.
Yeah, I would say this too. Like De'Aaron Fox is a guy who, like, year in and year out has a lot of technicals, right? Like I don't want to say he's a league leader, but last year he was tied for the 10th most technicals. You know who, De'Aaron Fox had as many technicals last season as Draymond Green.
Well, Draymond Green also played like 18 games because he was suspended.
No, that's true. He played 55 and Fox played 74. Devin Booker, Jason Tatum, they all, Nick Claxton, which is a surprise. They all had 10. You get all the way up to like Dylan Brooks had 15. Anthony Edwards had 15. Luka had 13. But Fox is a guy who knows exactly what to say when he's pissed. He doesn't bemoan the situation. He goes over and says whatever choice words.
Magic word.
Give me a tech. And that's what happens. And on occasion he gets fired up. There are officials that he doesn't like and that don't like him. And there's even one official that isn't fond of his wife, and they've got into it on the sidelines. Like,
is it Tony Brothers?
No, it's not Tony Brothers. Like, I don't think Tony Brothers actually knows where he's at when he's on an NBA court.
He's just vibing.
He just happens to be somewhere and like has a whistle.
Oh, whistle.
I think I'm just going to blow this whistle. Yeah. But no, there's a couple of officials that, like, again, DeMarcus Cousins got thrown out of a game at halftime by Scott Foster one time. I think they're playing Utah.
During halftime.
During halftime.
Not got thrown out of the game at the end of the half. No, like
they're the half ends.
Right.
He goes over after the half ends and yells at Scott Foster and gets ejected during halftime.
During the half.
Come out of halftime and DeMarcus Cousins is no longer on the court.
No mas.
So, like, there are these love-hate relationships, but at the same time, like, call it fair, and I don't think you have a bunch of problems. And I'm intrigued to see how the NBA officials call this season from start to finish.
Me too, man. Is it going to be how it was in the second half of last year?
I loved it.
It was great.
Yeah.
I don't know, and honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if it was that way again. I think Adam Silver had such genuine disdain for the All-Star game in particular, but the way the sport started to be played, where it wasn't trying. Look, if you're again, I'm gonna pick De'Aaron Fox here because we're in Sacramento. If you're De'Aaron Fox and you blow by the first defender and you get to the rack, center comes over late, hits your arm as you're going up for a layup, you get fouled. Cool. That's fine. I don't mind that. It's the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Oh.
It's the, okay, you get by your first defender, but then you slow down to get the guy on your hip and you stop and you try and like lean into him to draw some contact. And then you hold the ball out as the center comes over because you're trying to draw that contact. It's you're driving to draw contact.
Mm-hmm.
You're not driving to score and then drawing contact because you've done all the right things offensively. I think Adam Silver has such a genuine disdain for the type of basketball that is not, hey, I'm going to use my skills to get a bucket. It's, I'm going to use my skills to bait a foul. And I think the All-Star game and the lack of trying in the All-Star game just sent him over the edge, where I think we're going to see this year, there's going to be whatever edict got sent down from the league in the second half of last year, I think he's going to be like, nope, do it again. The whole year.
I hope so, because I think what Adam Silver saw in the All-Star game was, I can't let my game become this.
Yes.
And it sure as hell is looking like this in game 42 of the regular season and game 12 of the regular season. It's looking just like that, where the offensive numbers are so outlandish and crazy. We talked about it. You know, the Kings at the all-time mark with like 118.6, all-time highest offensive rating, right?
Mm-hmm.
The next year, it like 4 points higher.
Yeah, they were like 8 of the top 10 offenses in the first half all had a higher offensive rating
than what the Kings had.
Yes.
It was so outlandishly crazy. And I don't know if it's like players are figuring something out and it's opening some door, but whatever it was, it was not the game of basketball that people are used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was very, very alarming for Adam Silver. And then when you got to the All-Star game and they tricked off the All-Star game, you instantly started saying, that is not where I want my game heading.
Dude,
and you better play defense.
When he handed, and he's like, congratulations on scoring the most points, I guess, or whatever he said. He was pissed.
I don't blame him.
Yeah.
At all. Like, I for me, like, go out there and play the game honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, play defense.
That's it. I would so much rather, as a viewer of the sport,
mm-hmm.
I would way rather walk away from a game going, man, they didn't call a lot of fouls tonight. Instead of, man, they called a lot of fouls tonight.
Yeah.
Like, there's just, I would rather, if you're going to lose a game, I would rather lose a game because the refs let the guys play at the end than lose a game because foul grifting allowed the other team to win.
Yes.
Like that's swallow the whistle versus a phantom whistle.
No, totally. Some point you've got to balance out the game and balance out the league.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't let the game like fall apart. You can't let it
gotta
become
reel
something.
It back in.
Yeah, you do.
The guys are just, honestly, guys are too skilled now.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Edwards just brought this up, and I know it became a big topic of conversation because he said in the NBA, Michael Jordan used to be the only guy who had skills, which is not the case. But the overall theme of the league is just more skilled now. Yeah, that tracks. That's just kind of how the game evolves.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've told this story before. Like Chris Gent told me, I said, you know, you're a guy who played with Hakeem Olajuwon, mm-hmm. and now you're coaching DeMarcus mm-hmm. Cousins. And he laughed. He's like, dude, Hakeem couldn't dribble the ball twice.
Right, right. He had post moves and skills, obviously. He was incredible. And
Hakeem
incredible
is one of the greatest players the correct game has ever seen.
Correct.
Right?
Right.
Top 25 player of all time.
But 7-footers putting the ball on the deck and being able to dribble and shoot threes, like, just, right?
Yeah.
So you cannot also have that coincide. So it's harder to defend than ever. Teams are using more of the floor than ever. You can't also have all of that coincide with, yeah, every toss of the head, every touch, every throwing the ball in the air and screaming is a foul. That cannot also be happening. Because what is a defense to do now? You can't touch a guy, and also you have to defend every inch of the floor, and also every player can dribble and every player can shoot. And also, by the way, don't touch anyone ever.
Yeah.
It's impossible. It's stupid. So I hope Adam Silver genuinely sees it that way, and that wasn't like a, hey, gonna send a message in the second half of the year, but then we'll go back.
No.
Like, no, dude, let it be that way. It's such a better product.
Yeah, it's such
so
a better product.
So much more
product
fun that way.
Yeah, and it balances the game.
Big time.
Because
big
that time way, you can't just have the five best offensive players in the league on the court, or your five best offensive players, and just like, oh, we're just gonna score.
Right.
You have to actually balance your team and have players who do the dirty work.
Yeah.
Like the way it was heading, it decreases the value of players so much, and players get away from who they've always been so much that it just completely wipes out the need for offense, for defensive players. It's just totally bizarre.
No doubt. Before we get to the handoff, let's get to everybody's favorite segment of the week. It's Mitch in New Jersey. Mitch, what do you got for us?
Kyle and James, how we doing?
Doing great.
You know, I was just teasing, but I always, it blows back in my face. You said something about USC. It's like, why do I have to send tweets? It has to be everyone. So I got two other communities, USC and
the Clippers.
I got the other one. I don't remember.
I just want you to know, when you do that, Mitch, I don't mind. I just can't respond to you.
Oh, I can't. You can't?
No, because I'm not in those communities.
This X is getting harder.
I know. I know it. What do you got for us, Mitch?
Hey, you were talking about 49ers. I think they just better cut bait. Get something for Ayuk. Because I like the Debo running back. At least they mentioned still on the team and Mason. And Debo and McGrath. Oh, God, I screw up the name again.
McCaffrey.
Chris McCaffrey are like interchangeable. You have to go all the way, but I just have a feeling that Kansas City guys will win. Oh, my God, I'm losing train of thought here.
It's all good, Mitch. I do it every day.
McMullins. Oh, my God. I need a weekend. I need a rest. Thank you so much.
We'll see you, Mitch.
We love you, Mitch.
It's time for the handoff. Kenny Caraway. I'm really glad you got to experience that.
Mitch
with us
is my dog. Well, I didn't because I don't have
earbuds
in. And it's the one time I don't have no earbuds in.
Oh, I thought you because you were laughing at all the right times.
No, because I was listening. I faintly heard him, and I was like,
yeah,
it's just,
hey,
it's just Mitch.
Famous 49ers running back, Chris McGrath.
Yo, come on, man. Chris McGrath.
No, but he said he stumbled over his words and then tried to like correct himself, but then also continue. He just said at the end, he's like, you know what? I need a weekend. I'm out.
Yeah.
My man.
He bailed.
That's my dog.
Shout
man
out to Mitch.
Mitch, that's my boy.
Everybody's favorite segment. I don't even know. We got some Raiders Niners tonight.
Raiders Niners tonight. I mean, so what's
season finale?
What's the word? I'm hearing AP. Coach AP,
Antonio Pierce.
None of the his guys are playing.
Not even Aiden O'Connell.
Not even Aiden O'Connell. That's crazy.
No. Niners gonna play some starters.
Okay. How long do you think they're gonna play? I'd say two series.
That's what I think. I said this earlier. James disagreed, but and he's probably right. I think if the Raiders were playing their starters, I think maybe the Niners starters go a third series, just because the Raiders starters are out there. They're just trying to get some work in. But when it's backups and it's reserves and it's guys fighting for roster spots and it's Niners starters who maybe aren't going as hard.
Right.
Like, does that make sense? Maybe I'm oversimplifying it.
No,
I think two series is where they're hoping to land.
It's almost, and James, you'd understand this too, it's almost as if you wouldn't want De'Aaron Fox, Sabonis playing in the summer league.
Exactly. You know what exactly.
Because those guys in the summer league are a little more dangerous than even regular NBA bench guys because they're fighting for everything. They're trying to make a name for themselves. So you don't want those guys out there too long.
It's even like the first preseason game in basketball, you know, maybe 8, 8 minutes, 10 minutes per guy, and then you're done. Like, you don't want him playing a bunch in the second half because you still do have a couple of guys on the roster that are trying to make it,
right.
And you're like, okay, let's be a little more cautious with who's out there. And then you just progressively grow. And by the last preseason game in the NBA, well, the fourth preseason game, if there's five, they usually build up, and guys are playing like, you know, 24, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you just pull back a little bit for the final game because you don't want anyone getting hurt and you go into the regular season. But like the NFL, I think you do need to get hit. You don't need four preseason games. You do need to see a bunch of these guys because you have such a huge roster, like 37 guys who aren't on the main roster, and they're going to be fighting for positions. But you also have to understand that late in a game, especially the final preseason game, there's always like four guys who get hurt that are like, oh, and they're not getting up, and you got to cart them off, and they're guys that weren't going to make the team but are now getting an injury settlement. And so there's all of that stuff that's going on. But you also don't want someone taking someone's head off because they don't know what they're doing and they're trying their best to go win a spot. And it's like, man, you just hurt somebody bad.
Yeah.
And that happens.
Yeah.
So
that's facts.
Yeah.
That's facts.
I'm right there.
Hey, I got a question for you. We'll try and, you know, get the answer in for both of you guys.
I don't even know what time we're out is. So you let it rip and I'll figure out when we need to be out.
Yeah.
Who's the best coach alive, best football coach alive? Like, that's active.
So Belichick doesn't count?
No.
Andy Reid?
Okay.
Sean McVay's probably up there?
Yeah.
Sean McVay's a really good coach.
Yeah, yeah. I think Andy Reid.
Tomlin.
Yeah.
I think, dude, here's the argument for Mike Tomlin. Bro has never had a losing season. You know how long he's been the coach of the Steelers? And he's never had a losing season. I know we get so obsessed with offensive minds, and that's Andy Reid, and it's Kyle Shanahan, and it's Sean McVay, and that's the way the league is going right now. But to be in the NFL for as long as Mike Tomlin had, not 1 year where, you know, everything went wrong, and they went 4-12. Not once? That's coaching to me. Mike Tomlin's the man.
Well, look at some of the quarterbacks he's had to run out there since the Roethlisberger era.
Exactly, dude.
Oh, my gosh.
Nine wins?
How is it
eight, nine, ten
wins? You get to 500 with Kyle Rudolph or with Pickett?
Duck Hodges.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Man, they've had some
Mike
absolute
It might be
trash.
Mike Tomlin.
John
Harbaugh's a good coach, too.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Underrated. Who are you thinking?
We went. I'm just saying, I like the Tomlin suggestion. We went about four or five coaches before we said Kyle Shanahan? Really?
We went through this the other day with the ESPN rankings yesterday, right?
Yeah, we got to go. You want to hash this out?
No,
we'll
talk about it. Okay, it was about four, five, six, seven, 20 coaches before we said Kyle Shanahan.
I have so many thoughts.
That's what we're doing?
I have so many thoughts on this. Okay. I have a lot of thoughts on this. Okay. Me and Kenny, continuing this conversation coming up, D'Lo will also be here.
James will be here at 3, and
James
we'll talk about it more.
Here we go. All right, D'Lo and KC coming up next. Appreciate it, everybody, for tapping in this week.
Special
everybody
promotion going on right now. Purchase a Pennzoil Platinum full.
54.
Wow. That went to break.